Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, books. Zach Ostrom here. I win Cider in an Apple Store. This is Mind Your Banners for Thursday. I thought it was Friday for a second there, Dustin. October 27th, 2022. And this is the first pre-game Mind Your Banners of the basketball season. I don't think it's going to be, I don't think we're going to do one of these for every single basketball game. We'll see if we will. But I imagine people just want to be thinking about talking about basketball a little bit, Dustin, because basketball does return to Bloomington this weekend. Indiana hosts Marion at 3 p.m. Saturday in an exhibition at Assembly Hall. And, listen, obviously they should win. They should win comfortably, et cetera. Scott Hetty's a heck of a coach, but the gap between these two programs should still be pretty large. But this is a first chance to look at this team, and it's a first chance to sort of answer these questions that we've had all offseason. Like, there's so many, as we've discussed in other podcasts, there are so many Big Ten teams with more existential questions than Indiana. And, you know, part of the sort of the math for Indiana was always going to be, if you're going to win the Big Ten, basically part of that process is you finding the answers to the specific questions while everyone else is still looking to the answers to the big thoughts questions. And I think this is the first chance to look at this team and see where they are in that pursuit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've gotten flashes, obviously, to this point. I mean, between, you know, a little bit of scrimmaging and some contests, whatever, back at that Hoosier Hysterics event going back in August. And obviously the 6 or 7 minutes or whatever it was that we watched of scrimmaging at Hoosier Hysteria a couple weeks ago. We've gotten flashes. We know what, you know, players have told us, basically, and they've been candid in fairness to Indiana and its sort of press relations. We were able to talk to more guys and get more sort of FaceTime with players this offseason than maybe we ever have. As we've been covering this beat, we've had opportunity to really talk to these guys and get a sense of, you know, who's improving, you know, what some of the fits are, you know, basically who's playing together, what improvements guys are making. You know, we've gotten some insight from that and more than we usually get. But obviously college basketball in Indiana in particular is still a pretty closed off operation, and we haven't been able to see this sort of happen in even practice like settings, let alone game like settings. So as you said, that there, you know, okay, this team has a headliner, it has a go-to guy in Trace Jackson Davis, it has a point guard with experience in Xavier Johnson, it has a glue guy who has been doing the little things for years in Race Thompson, and that alone makes you a competitive ball club. You know, those three guys in particular, now it's filling in the rest of the dots. This rest of those spaces, okay, what becomes what? You know, is Jalen Hood-Schifino as good at advertised? Do Tamar Bates and Jordan Geronimo make leaps? You know, where do they fit in? What does Miller Kopp take another step? Where is everybody's role? How do the pieces all fit? And that's what we're going to get a sense of. You know, what does it look like when Xavier Johnson and Jalen Hood-Schifino are on the floor together? Those types of things, you know, just all of that. You know, again, obviously, as we've asked a whole bunch of times, where does the outside shooting come from? A lot of those, you're going to start to answer those questions. Obviously, you're not going to get them all answered. There are questions about this team that we're still going to have, I think, going into at least December, or at least that North Carolina game at the end of November, and even, you know, through into January, when, you know, Big Ten play tends to slow things up and it's a little bit of a different game than even you play in non-conference against better teams. But it's just, we get the beginnings this week. We just get to see what they look like, playing somebody else, running Mike Woodson's offense and defensive systems through the course of a game, and just get a baseline understanding of who this team is and could be.
I think actually one place that I'm I'm sort of curious to start, I guess, partly because we really, I don't think, have talked about it a heck of a lot this preseason, is, or this offseason rather, is with something that I think is going to be quietly crucial for Indiana that we, you know, I guess to some extent, probably people are taking to a certain extent for granted. And that is this team's defense. And there's no reason to believe this team won't be just as good as it was defensively a year ago. You know, virtually all the key pieces are back. You can make a case for like a Rob Fennessy, for example, kind of being an important defender on the second line, but like you need to be able to replace your backup point guard from a defensive perspective. You know, I think it went a little bit under the radar how good Indiana was defensively last season. They were top 25 nationally in these are all per Ken Pomeroy, in adjusted defensive efficiency, just outside the top 25 in opponent effective field goal percentage, and top 25 in opponent 2-point percentage and block percentage, block rate, however you want to phrase that. Also, I apologize for anyone if I sound funky here, if I cough in your ear, I have a sinus infection. So I realize my voice may sound a bit strange. Anyway, you know, if you look at their Big Ten specific numbers, they were top 5 in the conference in opponent effective field goal percentage, opponent turnover rate, and opponent 2- and 3-point percentage. And they were first in the conference in both block rate and overall adjusted efficiency. I bring all this up. We talked about this a lot last year. We haven't talked about it a lot in the offseason. As much as we want to talk about the areas where Indiana can raise its ceiling, defense is its floor. This team's ability to defend, to protect the rim, to control the rim, to control the glass, all that stuff should generally remain. And we've even heard Jordan Geronimo's made steps, and Jalen Hood-Schifino's a two-way player, and all this. All that should remain, but, you know, you can't regress there while you're trying to improve in other areas, particularly when so much of what made Indiana good defensively last season from a personnel standpoint and from a rotations and combination standpoint is still there. And that's something that I think I'm curious about in these exhibition games, because that's sort of something that can kind of prove true even in games like this, is basically just, do you have the intensity and the connectedness as a unit to be able to just have, you know, build 3- and 4-minute stretches, even in an exhibition game where it's like, you know, you're prepared to just absolutely kind of shut the other team down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's, like, as you mentioned, the important strengths are there. And as you mentioned, block rate, being very high. I mean, just maintaining the size in the middle. Obviously, Trayce Jackson-Davis, you know, was freed up to go block shots last year. We talked a lot about that last season, about how, you know, he was generally effective to stay on his man in the Archie Miller era. And Mike Woodson sort of freed him up to say, no, go jump off your guy, go block that guy, go attack shots. And, you know, just trust somebody to rotate behind you on your man, just go after the ball. And just, you know, Jackson Davis, Thompson, even Geronimo's ability to defend around the rim, to protect the rim, is, you know, goes a long way there. It's still therefore going to be really difficult to score at the rim against these guys. And it was very much so last year. I think, you know, Finnessy's loss is important. I mean, I think you can it's going to be noticeable, I think, is a big thing. You're like, I think Jalen Hood-Schifino is going to be a really good on-ball defender. And it's just, again, do you have a second line? You know, does he operate as a second line point guard as well? Is Tamar Bates your second line point guard? Can Tamar Bates become a much better defender than he was? You know, I think this, its ceiling as a defensive team still is determined by, you know, are they still going to be as good on the ball as they were? And can they get better on the wing? You know, that's, I think, the one area where they weren't great is defending wings. I mean, I think, you know, as good as their overall defenders, Race Thompson was, you know, when he got stuck on the Keegan Murrays of the world, he sometimes lost those matchups, you know, when it was a really, really good stretch for And, you know, twos and threes could give them problems, especially when Trey Galloway was out. You know, Galloway gave them, you know, when he came back from his initial injury, you know, really gave them a lot of help there. Obviously gave, you know, Jaden Ivey some real problems when he took that matchup. And he's obviously still going to be a part of this, but it's like, okay, the question is, what kind of minutes is he going to get? And are, you know, don't you at the end of the day need the Hood Schifinos, the Tamar Bateses, and, you know, Miller Kopp to some extent, or whoever else is playing the two and the three to be able to really lock down on, you know, on really good shooting guards. You saw, you know, Parker Stewart take a lot of those assignments last year. And I thought he got better the way the season, as the season went on, but it would really be good for them if they've got a true shooting guard who can really, really guard.
I think that is, you know, I mean, therefore, the big question for me is Jalen Hood-Schifino, because it there's been so much talk about him, not just as, oh, he's a really good player, or, you know, Xavier Johnson kind of bigging up the idea of the two of them being sort of dual point guards and all this kind of stuff. But there's also just like the functional, I mean, people are talking about him like he's a genuine threat defensively, that like he's the kind of guy that can take on a big defensive matchup. Now, he's not 6'6". You know, you use the Keegan Murray comparison a minute ago. Keegan Murray was a legit 6'7", 6'8". You're not using Jalen Hood-Schifino in that context. But maybe he balances the scales a little bit more if he's as good defensively as his teammates are suggesting he is, against a Johnny Davis type player, you know, right. Maybe even to some extent, you know, when I think back to that Michigan game in Bloomington, where I think by the end of that game, Xavier Johnson was guarding Caleb Houston, because they had nobody that could guard Caleb Houston. And so they were just taking the guy that at least could be quick and give him some trouble with his quickness. You know, Hood-Schifino, he might well be this good defensively, individually. The question is, how quickly do you adapt him into the wider setup? And how quickly, it's not like Indiana, it's not the pack line. It is a much more sort of straight up and down man-to-man defense. There's some switching involved, you know, but there's, you know, a lot of the defensive concepts, at least in theory, are fairly straightforward. But defense, as we know, is all about communication. It's all about rotation. It's all about five players working as one in a way that in some ways even offense really isn't. How quickly do you get Hood-Schifino back into that? You know, how quickly do you get him comfortable in that? And how quickly can he pick up on a lot of the triggers and, you know, the sort of, you know, this is when I switch, but this is when I don't, and things like that? Because it's one thing to say, oh, he can take a tough individual matchup. Well, that's great. But a lot more often, a guy's defensive efficacy is going to be defined by how, you know, just how good he is working within, you know, the five-man dynamic. And so I think that it's been interesting to hear everybody talk about Hood-Schifino that way. I think he could be a really good player for Indiana. But if he's going to have that impact, then again, I think the early test is basically going to be, how does he fit into the wider structure, essentially?
Yeah, and there's also, like, even on, when it comes to individual matchups, it's what teams do to basically make those matchups efficient. Basically, like if they have a great player, what do they do for him to give him opportunities? I think one thing, when I talked to Tamar Bates in December of last year, I did a really big feature on him, you know, because everybody told me how great of a defender Tamar was, you know, and how great he was in high school and how much he cared about that, how much he locked in, and, you know, even the guys at IMG, you know, so we're talking about sort of similar level of basketball, you know, that I mean, he was playing at IMG his senior year, and his coach at IMG, and I don't know why I'm blanking on him because I talked to him a bunch of times, but like was just singing his praises about this guy really cares about getting down and guarding. Like this guy wants to take away, you know, your best offensive player. He wants to swallow him up. And, you know, that's really important. You don't always have guys that really care about the little things, you know, playing at some of these superpowers because they're thinking about, you know, scoring and making sure that they're highly recruited. And, you know, so I imagine, I think Huchefino has a little more, physical maturity. I think he's got a little bit more muscle to him. And I think Montverde is even operating on a higher plane of existence than IMG is right now, or has been. But that's still, I think, an issue. Is, I mean, one thing Tamar said was just like, you know, the screens just come from everywhere. You know, and it just like that's the thing is you might be locking in on your guy, and you got to be able to see and fight through these guys who are way, way bigger than you're used to dealing with. You know, it's not like, it's not a 6'7", 200 pound guy who's sending the pick on you. You know, it's 6'9", 260, or somewhere in that range. I mean, basically it's, or you know, maybe slightly smaller, 6'9", 240, whatever you got. It's a bigger dude, who's coming to hit you and, you know, just get you off your mark. And I think that was something he struggled with for a while, you know, setups on screens that I think I just remember one bucket where like he just turned and saw a guy next to him and just knew he was in trouble. It was like, oh man, I did not see this coming. And so it's stuff like that. It's getting used to how many different ways, even if you're a good defender, they're going to scheme ways to get you off your guy, get you off balance, get you lost in screens and stuff like that. You know, just little things that they do. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he does with that. Now, I think, I mean, again, that's nothing to say that Huchefino isn't a really, really smart player, because I think he's a really smart player. Like, I think he's really got a next level mind, but it's still an adjustment. You're still seeing things at a different level. And there are things you got to be prepared for as a defender that take you a while to get used to. I think in terms of just what you have to face to stay on your man.
3-point shooting, I you know, good Lord. I mean, like someday Indiana will be good at it again. And yeah, I've spent the last like probably about the last 4 years, I would say at least 3 years, just sort of assuming like it can't be worse.
Right.
And then it certainly isn't any better. I will bang the drum for the idea that generally, you know, you can hope that, I mean, like, for example, what did Tamar Bates shoot from three last year?
29.8%.
What's that?
17 of 57, 29.8%. I think I just.
Okay. So like, it's not unreasonable to assume he can at least get up to 33, 34%.
Right.
You know, you can look at a Miller Kopp. I think a lot of people are hoping, and I don't think this is completely unreasonable. I think a lot of people are hoping that Miller Kopp maybe being freed up from some defensive responsibilities allows him to focus more of his effort into defensive end or the offensive end of the floor. You know, one thing that's always struck me about Kopp, he wasn't a bad 3-point shooter last year. He hit 36.1% of his threes, 35.1% in Big Ten play, which wasn't awful, but he was also indicative of, I think, a parallel problem Indiana had. He only attempted 57 threes in Big Ten play in 20 Big Ten games. He attempted 51 in the other 15 games Indiana played. Yep. So he had almost the same number of attempts in 15 not Big Ten games as he had in 20 Big Ten games. Indiana, we heard so much last year. I'm going to tell them to keep shooting. I want these guys to keep shooting. You know, even if they're not making them, we're going to keep shooting them. Indiana finished in the 310s last year. They averaged, I think, about 17.7, 17.8 three-point attempts per game. They did not do that at all. And I bring that up because you can hope for improvement from a Tamar Bates. You can hope that maybe Jalen Huchefino is at worst no worse than Rob Fennessy, who is 19 of 72. That's 26.4%. You can hope that maybe a Miller Kopp can bring his 36.1% up to closer to, you know, 40%, something like that. And I know there's also been a lot of chat about Parker Stewart, and Indiana losing Parker Stewart, when you look at the fact that Parker Stewart tailed off pretty badly from behind the three-point line, certainly was not the, from, you know, kind of early January, mid-January through kind of to March. And he had a bit of a resurgence in the postseason. You know, Indiana's last five games, I'm looking at the math right here, he was 4-13, 5-15 in their last six games. So he pushed back in a little bit. But by the end of the season, Stewart was not, you know, people say they lost their leading three-point shooter. Functionally, he was not that for Indiana by the end of last season, by the business end of last season. You can be optimistic about the idea that at worst, a lot of this will be sort of net zero, and that you know, it would be hard for Tamar Bates to be worse. Miller Kopp can certainly make a case for being better, et cetera. I cannot get around past the idea that to some extent, this has just got to be marginal gains. You know, Tamar Bates goes from 29% to 33%. Jordan Geronimo goes from, where was he last year? Jordan Geronimo goes from 31% to 33%. Miller Kopp goes from 36 to 38. But more importantly, they shoot more of them, because it got to a point last season where there was just such a lack of willingness to pull the trigger. And, you know, you can debate these numbers, and I'm not going to go to the wall to defend or criticize, you know, the websites that put this stuff together. But if you look at the websites that try to track basically what they call shot quality metrics, Indiana was getting good shots. Their offense was creating good shots. And for a while, they weren't knocking enough of them down. After a while, it felt like they just stopped taking them. And that's, you know, in a way, that's almost worse, because you don't even have the threat of maybe tonight's the night they hit 12 and we weren't ready for it and they beat us. There's got to be a willingness from this team to shoot through bad stretches, even if every once in a while they go really cold.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one thing I think is just going to be interesting is just how the spacing changes. Because, you know, obviously, you know, lineups were just interesting last year, you know, just going with that starting five, when you've got Stewart and Kopp that really aren't making any plays off the bounce at all, and are just both kind of waiting for Xavier Johnson to put the ball in their shot pocket and try to hit something. That I think, you know, that was an issue in and of itself. I mean, I think part of it is like, yeah, they, you know, I think what maybe contributes to the shot metrics is they took the really good ones, but they couldn't really create their own. I mean, you know, how many dribbles did, you know, Parker Stewart and Miller Kopp take all of last year? You know, it's not like, okay, you get them the ball in the perimeter and there's a guy there and okay, like you've got to have a jab step dribble or whatever to back them off. You know, how many of those are those guys taking? Basically, if it's not there, it's not, you know, they just weren't taking it. There just was not a lot they were getting done off the bounce. You started to see a little bit more as the season went on, but not really. And I think that's what's going to be different about this group is I think there are, you know, Kopp being the one exception, the guys that are shoot threes are guys that, you know, can create their own space, you know, with the bounce. And so that it's going to make a different dynamic. I mean, they might take more by virtue of there are more guys who are willing to, with a man in front of them, you know, take a couple crossover dribbles, you know, just take a jab step, something like that. Just try to back somebody off where, you know, it was more of a case of if no one leaves Miller Kopp and Parker Stewart, they're not taking the shot. You know, it's basically if someone doesn't collapse off of them, they're not shooting the basketball. And I think that's an issue too, is how is spacing going to change if you have more guys that can really attack off the dribble that are forcing defenses to collapse, but also you have more guys that you can give them the ball in the perimeter and they can get their own. They can just say, okay, I'm in an ISO situation. I can create enough space from my guy to be able to take a clean three and be able to make it 30 some percent of the time. You know, are they going to be able to get guys? I think that's really an issue. There might be more guys who can move and shoot on this team. I think it's important to still have at least one guy you can just let sit in the corner and doesn't need it to dribble at all and make a shot. And Miller Kopp is good at that, and that's important. But I think it's also, you know, better. I think you got to have at least one guy that can move and shoot. And I think they've got more guys on this team than they had on last year's team that are going to be able to move and shoot the basketball.
Yeah, I would push back on that ever so slightly. And all I would say is that generally the vast majority of quality 3-point attempts are still spot up shots. But I do think you hit it something I agree with in that, you know, what you were talking about there, which is, I think at absolute worst, this team is going to have more capacity between Jalen Hood-Schifino in the fold. You know, obviously another year for a Tamar Bates, another year for perhaps a Jordan Geronimo, certainly a Trey Galloway. Though obviously Galloway's health has you know, kind of come and gone as an issue through his career. This team is going to have more ability to get in the lane and break other teams down off the dribble. And if that happens, then I think you start to see, obviously, that can affect shot quality, but it's also just kind of the general idea that the more you know, we've talked so much about this, and listen, these things have to go hand in hand, because if you can't hit threes, then defenses can pinch and they can collapse, and then suddenly you can't drive into the lane because they don't have any, there's nothing making them respect you not being in the lane, or there's nothing they have to respect that keeps them out of the lane. And so they can cheat in a little bit, and suddenly the lane is high traffic and they can get some pause on the ball, and suddenly there's more turnovers and all that. But if you have more players, you know, I mean, listen, Indiana was a bad 3-point shooting team last year, and they still got those last 10, 12 games into those pick and roll situations with Trayce Jackson-Davis and Xavier Johnson, that really turned into very, very positive offensive plays. Now, all of a sudden, you've got more guys that might be able to do that, and then guys that can do it off the ball, or guys that can do it as secondary ball handlers who can do it on the reverse, et cetera. This is where I just come back to the idea that it's some, like, Indiana should, if Indiana, even if Indiana is literally no better this year shooting the three than they were a year ago statistically, they should be able to collapse defenses more consistently and effectively than they did last season. And if they are capable of that, then the shot quality, the metrics, the eyeball test, whatever you want to use, should say that the shot quality should go up even further. If that's the case, you just need to pull some of those. If this offense on paper should be better than last year's offense at creating good shots. And again, I push back a little bit in the idea that you want to go heavy on the dribble threes and the, you know, I mean, some guys can do it. Jordan Hulls was an outstanding shooter off the dribble. Some guys can do that. Yogi Ferrell was really good at it too. The majority of good 3-point attempts are still jump shot attempts in general are still going to come, you know, basically in spot up situations, but this team should be able to create more of those. And that only makes me double down on the idea that there might be nights where they're not going in, but you just need to keep shooting them, because at some point, it's not like you're going to start making them just because the basketball gods decided it was time, but at some point, some of that comes back the other way around, and you've got to make people respect that it can, even if every once in a while you throw up an 8-for-26 as a team from behind the arc.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you there. I mean, we're mostly in agreement here. I think one thing, if there's more dribble drive movement, I think they got a lot of threes early last year out of, you know, Trayce Jackson-Davis passing out of a double team. And setting up Parker Stewart for like T-ball threes. And I know, like, back to, you know, even the Notre Dame game, that was the thing that we wrote about. I know that was the thing that you wrote about a lot, that, you know, it was forcing bodies away from Jackson Davis a little bit, is that, you know, people were going to have to respect Parker Stewart. But early on, you know, he was getting doubles and Park, you know, Traxxas Davis was just flipping out to Parker and Parker was getting open threes. And I think you saw less of those as the season wore on. It was not as an effective way of producing a three because I think people noticed, okay, just keep bodies on Parker and Miller, but otherwise collapse. I mean, you know, they sort of identified, there were a couple games when Xavier Johnson and Rob Phinisee took advantage of this, but there were some games they didn't, that they were basically really backing off of them and, you know, using, you know, point guards to really clog the lane. But I think just all of the dribble drive movement is going to make a difference. As you mentioned, the pick and roll stuff is going to be big. And you know, that it'll get Trayce Jackson-Davis a lot more opportunities. He can shoot his own threes. He can get a lot more buckets off of movement going downhill. There'll still certainly be post-op opportunities for him to score the basketball, but the more they're in movement, I think the more he has a chance of getting open stuff, and they can, you know, again, collapse defenses, you know, just going down a hill on pick and roll and finding guys in corners, you know, for there or on the wing, and for those to be open shots and to be in movement and to have defenses scramble. I think there's going to be a lot more of those. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that they should be just hunting crossover fadeaways, but, you know, all the same, that's going to be there. That, like, there are more guys who I think have a chance of hitting those shots than did a year ago, and I think that can at least put their attempt numbers up, and they'll make more. Whether they'll be, and I'm not saying, you know, pass up the open ones, but I think the dribble drive game will open up more open ones and sustain that even through the year. Basically, once everybody's figured out who you have to mark, I think there will still be open shots where I don't think last year there were as many for guys that, you know, teams knew that they had to mark.
We got like 2 minutes left. Anything else that you are particularly interested in this weekend? I'm curious about basically the second line of the front court. Obviously the freshmen are always intriguing, and I'm always curious if there's like a wrinkle we don't expect, but I don't know if there's anything that you're going to have an eye. You're going to walk into the building with an eye on Saturday.
Yeah, I think as I've just been sticking to the most intriguing players, you know, that we haven't either. We haven't seen, or we haven't seen in what in the capacity they need to be in. I mean, I'll be watching Tamar Bates, Jordan Geronimo, Malik Reno, and Renew, and Jalen Hood-Schifino are going to be the guys that I'm going to be most sort of transfixed on in terms of what they can do. And then Xavier Johnson after that, to see if we see more, if he starts off where he left off, or if he's, you know, if he gets back into kind of his old ways at all. I think that's a question of, you know, you always have to wonder if X has really turned the corner, or if, you know, he's still going to be up and down. If you see the X that you saw in most of the last 10 games, and if you can sustain that, you know, the capacity for obviously this team is a lot higher. So those are gonna be the guys I'm most interested in seeing and really evaluating to find out where they are. And we've talked about those guys all off season, but I'm very interested to see what they look like in a full basketball game. You know, Geronimo is a three, Bates is improvement, Hood-Schifino, Reyna, where he gets used. Those four guys are really intriguing to me, because I think that those guys can really raise the ceiling of this team.
3 p.m. Saturday, Assembly Hall. Marion visits Indiana, first of two preseason exhibitions. We'll podcast in some form after. It might be Saturday after the game, might be Sunday night. One way or the other, you will get our thoughts, as well as obviously all of the attendant coverage at IndyStar.com and HeraldTimesOnline.com. Thank you so much for listening. For Dustin Dupirak, I'm Zach Osterman. This has been Mind Your Banners for Thursday, October 27th. We will talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.